איזה רוגוש. עומר, רדי?
I am ready.
אוקיי, אין אקשן.
Shit, no props.
טה,
I gotta
טה.
find... Wait, wait, wait. Props.
Props. אוקיי, okay, I got my hands. אוקיי, okay, so we started.
Cool,
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 11th. We are
12th.
in the 11th?
12th.
12th?
12th, yeah.
It's because we skipped the, you know, the last one. We had those
Shh,
technical
that's a secret.
Issues.
We didn't skip anything.
Don't tell anyone. Don't tell them. So we don't have a YouTube episode. It got screwed. It's okay, okay. So we are on the 12th episode. We did
yep.
so many episodes, so we lost count. And
like it's I feel like 112 maybe. So we
yeah,
just restarted
I mean,
the counting at 100.
Like 10 years, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So today we are going to talk about observability.
Yeah.
And observability is a beautiful topic. Right? So this is today's topic, and of course, the same question each time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Omer, Omer, what time is it right now? Omer.
Where exactly well, are you asking?
What's the first thing that comes up to your mind when you think of DevOps and observability? What do you think
okay.
about that?
Okay. Actually, when coming to observability, since it's one of these buzzwords, we often choose topics like platform engineering. It's a
mm-hmm.
kind of a, it's not obvious, right? Because when you say platform engineering, another topic, what's the first thing that comes into your mind? I don't know, maybe a platform, a team or something. When you say observability, pretty much anyone, I think the first thing that comes to their mind is monitoring, right? Because a big aspect of our day-to-day job, wherever you are, right? You're an ops, DevOps, SRE, whatever you call yourself, you need to monitor services, you need to monitor applications, servers, machines running in the cloud, any kind of resource you want to monitor. And the reason you do that is you want to kind of inform yourself and the people surrounding you of what is the system's status. And the system status is not only to understand what's going on, it also applies, it kind of affects the business, right? Because if the systems are down, the business is down. If the systems are up, it means the business is functioning. Sometimes you want to have this status board that tells your customers also if everything's fine and whether the application can be worked with or not. So that's the first thing that comes into your mind. But I think observability, or I actually know that observability is a bit more than that. So monitoring is basically this. Is
a bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Just a bit.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so monitor. So you're going to talk about what monitoring now or more than that?
So I'm saying monitoring, first of all, is just the notion of having something visual that I can look at and maybe connect some kind of alerts to that. So I'm actually monitoring it like any other kind of monitoring. I know the health of a system and I can be alerted on that automatically or not automatically if something goes wrong. Something goes wrong, I think usually that's a certain threshold of a metric. Above 60, 70% CPU or my memory is skyrocketing or anything like that. And then I'm alerting to someone, some people, I don't know. Observability, however, is a kind of a bigger picture view of everything, and it's beyond that. It's going through the entire chain of knowing what's going on in the system. And by that, I mean is knowing, first of all, you need to start somewhere, and that's collecting, right? So you need to collect metrics and logs and everything in order to do something with them afterwards. So after you collect them, you transfer them into that can be your monitoring system. And after you have metrics and logs and everything you've collected in the monitoring system, you probably want to analyze that, right? And have some insights. So beyond just alerts of 60% CPU, do something, save me, you maybe want to extract certain things from the logs. You want to monitor performance. Maybe you have some kind of tracing abilities to know whether you have bottlenecks in your system. So it's a bird's eye view of your entire system, and it requires you to handle the entire chain, like collect my stuff, store them, monitor them, extract metrics, but then you want to also analyze them and extract insights from that. So that's the kind of a big notion of observability.
Let's double click. We like double clicking. Are you
yeah,
ready for
yeah.
the double click?
I'm ready.
Okay, you said extracting, right? So
yes.
Now when you say extracting data, I'm thinking, well, you know, let's say my application sends requests, receives requests and everything, and I want to measure my application. So for that, and I just want you to answer it because I think it's like it's a good, you know, question and answer, so people will be aware that they can create something special for their application. So what
mm-hmm.
if I want to extract data and measure my application. What should I do? How can I monitor my application when it comes to metrics, to logs and something? What can I do?
Okay, so like with every question in we've ever asked, I think.
It depends.
So it depends. I think the obvious place we can go to is a container orchestration system. Usually that would be Kubernetes. And in Kubernetes, the standards are pretty much the same. It's usually something like having a collector, maybe Filebit or something like that, that collects the logs. With container, it's relatively easy because you don't have to actually know the application. It's a container. So everything that goes to STD out, to your output, just is being stored as a text file that's generated by the container. And then your Filebit or whatever collector you have running on the node is just collecting those logs and shipping them somewhere. Sometimes you'll have something in the middle like Logstash, which is a transformational object that can make changes to your text logs, like on the way, on the stream. And then you'll store them somewhere, maybe use Redis in the system to kind of aggregate the logs and remove some kind of the load from your storage system. Then you store them in a place like Elasticsearch. By the way, everything I'm mentioning is the standard ELK or EFK today, which stands for the Elastic, maybe
Logs,
Filebit or something.
Loki, Logstash, and Kibana.
So Elastic, then Logstash or Filebit or whatever. And then what do we have in the end? KAK, Kibana for visualizing and probably producing metrics and alerts. Sorry. So that's the standard, right? So if you want to do something like that, you probably want to have ELK or EFK in your system. In Kubernetes, it's pretty standard. In Kubernetes, along comes a system like, Prometheus. So Prometheus can monitor your applications on the cluster and can actually read a set of metrics from text files by crawling them and analyzing them later on in a time series manner. So for example, I can monitor a certain application and monitor it every minute or every second or every 10 seconds and grab a set of metrics. And then I'm holding them with their timestamps in a timestamps database in that kind of a model. And then I can visualize it in a graph and tell you, okay, this kind of metric, maybe the number of users you have in your application, registered users, it went up this way and then it went out that way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's another way of doing stuff is monitoring application metrics. I hope I didn't
just
go
thinking
too
like, I wanted you to go this way exactly. So when you speak about Prometheus, you know, the time series database, and then we spoke about extracting data from applications. So I'm thinking, I just want to make sure. So you're referring to writing your own exporter to your application so it will write the metrics to Prometheus? Or are you talking like maybe is there a generic exporter that can extract data from your application? Because I'm aware only of writing your own, you know, like you need to analyze your application, then dump the data to some endpoint, and then Prometheus will scrape it, you know?
Yeah, so I think we shouldn't do this about Prometheus, like the entire thing, but specifically, if I'm not mistaken, Prometheus is used to this kind of, I think Prometheus was developed by SoundCloud and then kind of made up this standard of having slash metrics on your application. It doesn't have to be slash metrics, that's just the convention. And then you just use a key value system of text. That's the key is the metric, well, name, and the value is the numeric or whatever other value you use. And that's being collected by Prometheus. The standard way is it's crawling you for slash metrics. In Kubernetes, it's done by adding a certain annotation, I think, on the application, and then it knows that it needs to scan it, look for slash metrics or another endpoint, and just collect the collect everything that's being exported. On the other hand, yes, like you said, we can write an exporter, maybe have something instead of being crawled, we can intentionally push into Prometheus. That's another option. That's just the way of handling custom metrics on a cluster. So we touched on collecting, monitoring, analyzing kind of, because we talked about visualizing with Kibana or adding Grafana in order to even make it nicer. By the way, did you know that Grafana is a fork of Kibana?
No.
That's,
really?
That was kind of
how did you find out?
About a few months ago. I don't know. I just don't know. I just did.
Wow.
So they're a fork
of that's new to me. I want to add also to those exporters, you know, so in case we don't want to write custom exporters. So let's say my application is using MongoDB or any other, you know, cool database. So there are native exporters, maybe by the provider itself, you know,
right,
the database.
Right.
like Redis exporter, I don't know, or any other application that you want to monitor, you can use their exporter instead of writing your own, you know. So that's also something cool you can do if you want to add a monitoring layer to your application.
Correct.
Okay, let's talk about logs, because I'm scared of logs, okay? Because if you make a mistake with logs,
yeah.
Remember we talked about last week, like the debug trace is true, and then you get gigabytes of logs, and then you pay tons of money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I have a question to you.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a tough one. Do you
so
manage
the answer
all
is
your
I
logs?
No, I'll just give up to begin with.
Okay, so it's an easy one. Okay,
okay.
I'll ask an easy question.
Easy
it's not
questions.
Tough anymore.
I'm good with easy questions. Yeah.
Okay, so it's easy. Do you manage or do you prefer to manage all your logs in one system, or do you separate the logs to, let's say, 2, 3, 4 different systems? Depends on the needs. Like, do you push like to have one stop shop to all of your logs, or do you maybe you can split it between CloudWatch and you know, Grafana, Loki, you know, trying to split everything and one stop shop, or splitting it per environment, per application?
I would like to have one central system to use for everything. I would like to have some kind of segregation. So with CloudWatch, it's a bit harder. Although if you have separation between like different accounts are actually monitoring different environments, that's relatively simple. If you use a service provider, we can name names, but there are tons of them. Like I have 5 companies, and that's just from the top of my head, managing logs.
Mm-hmm.
They all know how to manage different environments. So it's pretty easy, but you can filter them with tags, prefixes, depends on the convention you use in the system. But to answer your questions, yes, I like to have it in one system so I can query everything. And another layer on top of that is sometimes things I'm not even aware of. When I'm querying something, I might kind of stumble upon things I didn't even mean to. Maybe I see exceptions that I didn't mean to even search, maybe on another application. And because I'm using the same aggregated system, I might be kind of aware of them. Whereas if I had a different system monitoring a different set of application or a different set of environments, I would not see that.
So I have a follow-up question about that. So since you prefer having one system to rule them all, okay,
yeah.
to rule all the logs.
Yeah.
So if, let's say, QA or some other team decide to do some, load testing, stress testing,
mm-hmm.
something like that. So the logs are going to get crazy, and then you're going to pay tons of money. So if you chose a cloud provider that provides you logs, you know, usually they cost a lot for each push. The storage is usually very cheap, but pushing logs costs a lot of money. So let's say I just bombed your application with tons of logs because, you know, massive use, stress test, load test. And since you're using the same for staging, development, and production, you're going to pay a lot of money just because you're load testing. So how can we avoid that if we can?
Okay. Yeah. I'm smiling ever since you started asking the question, because all I have in my mind hearing you ask the question is I wanna use this platform and this entire crowd that is sitting with us today and say, please, developers of the world, please stop pushing debug equals true to every production application ever existed. It's just, please, please, please don't set it hard-coded in your configuration files. Please don't do it, even if you use some kind of a metric system that you pull it from, don't do it hard-coded. Please, please, please do it based on your environment. Debug true is the one flag that you think doesn't matter a lot, but I want to debug my application. I want to see what's going on. It's okay to switch on for a little while. 9 times out of 10, when you do that, it's kind of perpetuates to every single part of the application, and exactly what you said, everything just start blowing up. And if that's
and
not...
even without debug, you know, let's even leave the debug alone. So let's say a stress test, or maybe one of the QA members, I think developers and QA members should work, because if they want to work, they can do whatever they want. I don't want to limit them because the logging system costs a lot of money.
Right.
So like to me, like my solution for that is, sometimes I will separate, you know, production having maybe some expensive cloud provider logs. And for my staging and development, I will use maybe Loki and Grafana for that, you know?
It's a good point, but it's a problematic point. And that's a philosophical discussion. Why? Because
that's why we are here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say you do that, exactly that. And we all do that. Like, I'm a sinner. I literally today, that's what we do. We have something switched on for production, exactly like you said, and it's not a preference. It's only because of costs. But having that in place, meaning I don't have the same quality of visualization or logging system on my staging. And that means a lot of bugs are probably finding their way through staging into production solely because I don't have that system in place. And then you can say, oh yeah, I didn't switch it on because it costs money, but what about the cost of having a bug into production, and maybe a customer is churned for that, or maybe engineering hours are now stretched into the night and someone has to sit and fix that for hours, days, weeks. So I think the best practice with everything is having exactly the same, at least for staging and production, right? If you have other environments like dev or QA environments and other things like that, it does make sense not to have not having to replicate everything. But at least for one environment that's not production, I think it's wise to switch things on and have them exactly the same, because that's the one gatekeeping, let's say, process from getting to your production.
Okay, I'm buying that solution. So assuming I'm quite a big startup, I'd say medium to big startup maybe, or a company, I have, you know, as you said, development, QA, and whatever, you know, those development environments, I'll put them with, I'll use on-prem or self-hosted, probably not on-prem, but self-hosted logging system, and for and the cloud provider for the production and staging. Okay, cool. What if I'm so small, extra small, and I only have two environments, staging and production? So would you recommend using them both, like putting them both in with the same cloud provider? So let's say, you know, some startups, because you know how it is, we can speak and talk about, well, you should have separate environments, you should have whatever, but some people are listening and saying, listen, dude, I have staging, which also serves as sometimes for development and stuff, and I only have two environments. What should I do then? I also want to have to help those people.
So again, it depends, right? I don't think it matters how big you are. It only matters how crucial production is for you. And that basically is like a byproduct of how many customers you have, or how critical is it in the process, in the life cycle of your company. If you have one customer and super critical, if that that customer will be the breaking point of whether this company is going to succeed or not, that's the make or break part of the company, you probably do want to follow best practices. That said, it might be not worth your time separating the environments completely if it takes, I don't know, 2 weeks work time where you have one engineer working on the project. So it very much depends. Look, the best practice is to separate environments. That probably won't be the thing that kills you. So you make your decisions. One thing I wanted to say, though, in terms of having the same systems, the one that you asked before and we talked about, if you're just one engineer or one customer or no customers at all, I think it's probably likely you're going to use the free tiers of everything. Just to name names, New Relic, Datadog, Elastic, all these, you can probably use their free tier and enjoy it and get really extreme value out of it. So I'm just putting it out there. And I'm building on top of that point to add another layer I think is worth discussing under the umbrella of observability, which we didn't, and that's APM. And I was reminded just because of naming New Relic. So just one example. So APM stands for
application monitoring
performance metrics, performance monitoring. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, a small component you install inside your application and can yield a ton of metrics and insights telling you what's going on with the application. It can let you know what's going on with the CPU cores and the memory, but that's just a small part of it, and that's relatively easy to understand. It will find bottlenecks and tracing and let you know how things perform to the granularity of a single function. Depending on the solution, it's immense. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. Very hard to implement in serverless, probably costly, but if you're working in containers, that's relatively easy. It, I think, depends on the language or the runtime you're working in, right? But tons of solutions out there that can handle probably most of runtime. So there's one layer that's important to mention. APM is crucial to your success and your ability to, let's use the term that we're considering, observe. that will help you observe what's actually going on. Because if you have a problem that you can't find in the logs or the metrics, they don't tell you the entire story, you can actually drill down into the metrics of a specific application and see what's going on. Maybe you have a memory leak, maybe one of the functions is killing you, maybe you have real story, a huge regex that's stopping your application from working. So that's it.
APM.
APM for the win.
APM. Do you know the terms? Okay, thank you for that. Do you know the terms maybe? Black box monitoring and white box monitoring, have you heard of it?
Nope.
Okay, the funny thing is, you know about terms, like you know what they are, both of them, but you just don't know that these are those names, you know?
Okay.
I'm sure you know them both. Okay, so white box labeling, white box monitoring, you know, I was like a white label, you know, got all mixed up. So white box monitoring means that you know what you are monitoring. Like you just said, the CPU, memory, lambda errors, everything that you know and monitor, and then you get alerts according to that. Black box monitoring, and then we'll probably do a double click on that. Can you guess what it is? I'll give you a clue. Do you know black box exporter?
Nope, I don't think so.
Okay, so the black box, so I think it's even easier to explain with an example, right? So when you check an endpoint, like it's like saying, I know that if I query my application at slash health server, not just health, which returns okay, but let's say health server, it will return something. And I know that this check does a lot of things behind the scenes. You know, this is why it's a black box. So then I know everything is okay. Okay, so black box exporter is one of those Prometheus exporters where you can just provide URLs of your application and then mimic maybe your end user's usage of the application to some of the APIs to see if your APIs are healthy or not. So what do you say about black box monitoring? Like, do you use that? Do you love it? Anything special to say about that?
It's a great idea. And it's what I think you brought up a point that in my experience, I can't even say 99% because it's really 100%. I've actually never seen someone implementing the slash health like they should. It's always return 200, okay,
okay.
Bye. Which means, okay, yeah, good. Everything's good. If the process is up, I'm good. Yeah, it doesn't mean the system can be, everything can be in flames.
Doesn't check anything.
Everything can be in flames behind it. But yeah, I'm good. 200, no worries. Go ahead.
So, this is how it feels, right? Yeah. Everything is okay. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, everything I'm good. It's, don't worry about it. It's all, yeah. So another call to everyone. It's hard, right? We all build applications. Just throwing 200 is the standard convention. If you have the time and you really want to understand what's going on, please do apply these checks. By the way, it can be also an attack vector, because if you like apply a lot of checks and someone just like, I think usually the slash health is something that's publicly exposed, unless you're not publicly exposing it, and that's another story. But if it is, it means that every time someone queries that, you're not only returning 200, you're doing some backend operations. And if someone can attack you and send tons of requests, you're probably going to die. So it's an attack vector for a DDoS.
Can I avoid that, Omer?
Right. So do it with, instead of doing it with every call, just do it periodically and export that to the 200, the slash health endpoint. Right. So do it periodically on your own, maybe every second, maybe every 10 seconds, but not with every request. That's my idea.
I thought you'll say something like make it available only internally or something like that. That's so maybe health can be like
option.
Public, and the major checks should be internally checked, you know,
it's another option,
or if it's a third.
You're totally right. But if you're using something external, like Pingdom, for example, you know, Pingdom. Not even Pingdom, like the status board of your company.
It's probably Uptime Robot. Yeah,
exactly. They all query the slash health of your applications. So I think you usually do want to have them public, because if you're monitoring something from within your system and the system's down, it doesn't mean anything, right? It doesn't mean crap. So you want something external monitoring you. And for that, you need to export the slash health. What you can do is use different endpoints. You can use one for an internal checkup and then one for the external, which can always return 200, right? Whenever AWS can be burning, you go to the status dashboard, we're all good. No worry, mate. So,
yes. And for that, you can also use security groups, Knuckles, if you want to whitelist specific IP addresses or maybe CIDR ranges of subnets, you know, because usually those third-party providers give you like these are our subnet ranges. You can whitelist those, and then you can check us and give us those endpoints, and we will check it and blah, blah.
Not my preference, okay, so, but yes, you sure can.
Okay, just an option. Mm-hmm. So black box monitoring, we also touched that. So we touched monitoring, we touched logs.
Collection, monitoring, analyzing, APM, black box and white box, the concept that you mentioned for monitoring. Touched mm-hmm. a little bit on some tools and applications that you can use, how to build a health endpoint.
Pretty much. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we can write a book about everything we said.
Okay. So, ready for the experience corner of the week? The corner?
Yeah.
Okay, you want me to start or do you want to start?
You start.
Okay, I'll give you a very, very weird scenario or case that happened to me this week. I didn't know about your favorite language or the TypeScript node, okay? So I use makefiles to automate stuff, even for DevOps, for CI/CD, even though it's not even in C++. I just love makefiles, you know. We'll talk about that, Omer. You'll find my new love. I have a new love. So in that makefile, when you use production environment or when it's production, then the node env environment variable, you know, this capital letters node mm-hmm. lower dash env is production. Now, when you do, apparently, I didn't know that. When you do yarn install, and while the node env is set to production, mm-hmm. it will only install your dependencies.
Yeah.
And not your dev dependencies, so you can't actually build the app.
Right.
So I didn't understand why my CI/CD is failing because, you know, because the makefile set this environment variable, I was like, okay, it's working on feature branches. It's working on development. It's working like on anything. So, well, when I say production, I mean staging, okay? So when we move to staging where it's like the same as production, so why isn't it working, you know? So we were stuck on staging for nothing, you know? It's like it's no reason at all.
I have to say it's a good thing you do because that means you're managing dev dependencies. It means you're working correctly. So that's a good failure, by the way.
It was so annoying, but, you know, to figure out why is Yarn installing only, then you have to go to the Yarn docs and realize that if you set this environment variable, it will only blah, blah. Yeah, so that was my great experience this week. What was yours? Experience or tool or whatever?
Okay, first of all, a comment about what you said. Make is great. I love Make. There's a better maybe alternative written in Rust. It's called Just. So just look for Just on GitHub later.
Maybe I will just like look it at it.
It's just easier syntax and it makes more sense with all the weird shenanigans of Make. Two things. One, I just discovered recently that if you want to query your CloudTrail logs on AWS, up until today, if you don't like the standard way of how they are presenting it, you obviously want to run some complex SQL queries, you'd export the entire thing to an Athena table and then run it there. AWS started. They released a new service, I think, this month, on January 2023, and they call it CloudTrail Lake, right? And CloudTrail Lake is kind of a pre-built Athena table with your data source. Everything is ready to you. All you have to do is just put the SQL query inside. Whereas before you'd had to create a database and then state a model
annoying.
Build the table and shit. Anyway, CloudTrail Lake is amazing. So that's the first thing. Other thing, we all write bash scripts all day long.
You do?
No way around it. You know, if you build CI and process it in containers, that's probably
okay, we do. Okay, so...
So I found a cool... Like, you have framework to build CLIs in Go, for example. You have Cobra in... I don't remember. Python has its own thing. Bash didn't have anything. And I found recently that it has a project that's called Bashly. And Bashly is a framework for building CLIs in Bash. And it's very easy. You just get a YAML. You state whatever commands you want. The flags, the arguments. Maybe you have some common library, etc., etc. And Bashly does it for you. You write Bashly generate, it generates the code. You can make changes, rerun the generate file, and it's incredible. So
you got me shocked there. I don't know if you noticed. This is the first time I'm Googling while we talk. Okay, you know why am I shocked?
Because you built something like that.
I don't know, 2 years ago, something which is called Bargs. I don't know if you remember. I think I talked with you about it. So I
You
created the
told me about it.
framework
I
bugs.
remember.
Yeah. And now I see Bashly and I'm like, wow. Wow. First, it looks
And
amazing.
by the way, I just figured it's an Israeli dude.
We have something with writing stuff, Yeah, I
Always
see it
end
right
up
now and it looks amazing. So Bashly, okay, yeah, it's like Bash and LY.
there.
Nice. I will take a look into it.
Yeah, super cool.
Cool. Okay, got me shocked over there. Sorry for that, for my shocked face and silence. And it was like, what? There's another framework? What's going on,
Yeah, it's written
But
in
how do
Ruby.
you
Surprise,
have
surprise,
you have
but
you used it?
yeah, I did.
And it's like, just to understand, like, is it something that you install on your
You
machine, like
install the
it's an
CLI,
application?
you install the CLI, you write the YAML. Every time you make changes to the YAML or your code, you just write Bashly generate. It updates like the final script. You can add things like common libraries, like utils. You can add tests. You can add all kinds of stuff, and it runs everything for you, like the checks, normalization, input validation. Basically, saves your lives from tons of bugs you have in Bash because you never run tests or validate anything.
Okay, so I think like the main difference from what I wrote is like that it like what I wrote is written in pure bash, so you just load the file that I, my file, and then you can use it.
So I think what you wrote is basically helping you kind of ramp up to the stage where you have arguments and flags, which is very annoying to write on your own. And this kind of brings you to the next level with tests and standards and everything you have around input validation and
Yeah,
normalization and
mine is like more
standards.
of a wrapper script, and this sounds like more of a real framework,
Yeah,
which is cool.
really
So I'll
nice.
definitely check it out.
Yep.
Okay, talked about 10 minutes about Bashly. Anyways, Omer, thank you very much. See you next week.
Thank you.
And
See you next time.
thank you, everyone. Yalla, bye.
Bye bye.